The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of this station. Content is for educational purposes only. Consult a financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence if investing. Calls are pre-screened and the show was pre-recorded earlier this week. Rick is with Edelman Financial Engines, a part of Financial Engines Advisors, LLC, and the investment advisor that furnishes this program. Barron's has ranked Edelman Financial Services as the number one independent advisory firm in the nation based on assets managed, team size, experience, and regulatory record. Firms self-nominate. Investor returns and experience are not considered. Edelman combined with Financial Engines Advisors in November 2018.
This is the Rick Edelman Show. Edelman Financial Engines is the number one ranked investment advisor in the country by Barron's. Now, here's Rick Edelman.
And a very happy weekend to you. Welcome to the Rick Edelman Show. Hope you're enjoying the summer season. And we've had some volatility on Wall Street this week. I'm sure you noticed it. Monday, the stock market had its biggest drop in, I think, over a year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 767 points. Now, we know why it did it. Very often, people are clueless or just struggling to understand, why does the market do what it's doing? Well, this one, I think, was pretty obvious to everybody. Last week, the prior Friday, the president announced new tariffs against China that were going to cost China billions, hundreds of billions of dollars, and then the Chinese retaliated by lowering the value of their currency relative to the dollar, and that led, in fact, the U.S. Treasury Department to label the Chinese as currency manipulators. So there's this back and forth, rock'em sock'em robots going on. I hit you, you hit me. And the stock market's not happy. The stock market fell almost 800 points on Monday. Why? Because Wall Street is worried that if the trade wars between the U.S. and China don't get resolved soon, it will begin to hurt the profits of America's companies. And if you hurt the profits of the companies, then the value of the stock has to go down. And they voted with their feet on Monday, demonstrating this by causing the stock market to drop almost 800 points. But apparently, that attitude didn't last very long because the very next day, the stock market rose 300 points. Well, I mean, if things were so bad on Monday that the market fell 700, almost 800 points, did something happen overnight that they changed their mind? Well, obviously, because the market was up 300. You know, you just have to wonder what's going on. And then we saw continued volatility through the rest of the week. So, what does all this mean for you? Here's the answer. It doesn't mean anything. This is nonsense. This is just political jockeying between two economic superpowers. Both are trying very hard to generate benefits for their own respective nations. They're both, frankly, acting as everybody respectively would want them to act. I think here in America, we have to acknowledge that we have a massive trade deficit. In other words, we buy more goods and services around the world than we sell. And that means more money is going out of the U.S. than is coming in with our trading partners. And President Trump has made it clear. He said this during his campaign in 2016. He's been saying it ever since. He doesn't like it, and he's going to do something about it. And well, now here he is. And those trading partners are retaliating because they're not happy about the tariffs they're being forced to pay to the U.S. And so it goes. Here's what it comes down to. These trade wars occur from time to time. When they occur, there's turmoil in the markets as the markets are trying to figure out, what does it all mean? What's the impact going to be? How long will it last? What's the implication on corporate profits and so on and so forth? And in the end, the trade wars get resolved. Now, does that mean I can promise you with absolute certainty that this current trade war is going to get resolved? Well, I'm not allowed to promise anything about anything. So no, I can't say it's going to get resolved, but how could it not be? I mean, one way or the other, the trade wars always get resolved, right? I mean, and when they do, Wall Street gets happy, meaning the stock market, which is going through declines in value, volatility in pricing, all settles itself out because just as they're unhappy about a trade war, they get very happy about trade peace. And therefore, our attitude is ignore all this. Or actually, you know what? Really? You could take advantage of this. How? by treating it as a buying opportunity. You could say, wait a minute, stock prices right now are lower than they were a week ago. Now, if you were happy with stock prices last week, you got to love them this week because they're even lower. In other words, you should be using this as an opportunity to buy, to add to your investment accounts, rather than getting scared and fill yourself with panic over fears that prices may go lower yet. Maybe they will in the short term, but in short answer, we're not concerned. We've seen this movie before. We know how it ends. At least that's our attitude about it. Might I be wrong? Well, I don't know. I'll get back to you. In the meantime, find something else to worry about, such as how your hometown baseball team is doing this week. I'll give you something to talk about. How are your investments doing? Because that's what all of this is really raising, isn't it? You're sitting there wondering, what does all this mean for my portfolio? How are my investments doing in the world of this? And you might be looking at your investments and comparing them to the Dow or the S&P 500 stock index and saying, golly gee, my account didn't go up nearly as much as the S&P 500. You know, year to date, the S&P 500 is up 18%. And you might say to yourself, golly gee willikers, my account certainly hasn't gone up that much. Well, I'd probably agree with you. I'll bet your account hasn't gone up that much. You know why? Because you don't own the S&P 500 exclusively. Oh, maybe you have an S&P 500 stock index fund inside your portfolio. Maybe it's a part of your portfolio, but you don't have your life savings in the S&P 500 stock index fund, do you? No. So why would you expect your return to match that of the S&P 500? In fact, how are you doing relative to everybody else? Well, why don't we take a look at professional investors? Who are some of the brightest professional investors who are managing billions and billions of dollars? Pension funds, right? We've got pension funds all around the country who are managing hundreds of billions of dollars on behalf of employees in municipal government as well as unions all around the country. CalPERS, the biggest pension fund in America, representing school teachers and public employees in California. We've got pension funds around the U.S., working for firefighters and police officers. We've got pension funds representing union workers, truck drivers, and factory workers. How are they doing with their investments? Well, the data is in. And according to the newest analysis, public pension funds that are managing $1 billion or more, their median return for the 12 months ending July 31, 6.8%.
You must be joking.
That's it. 6.8%. That's all they earned. So I'll put it to you again. What's your return? And that's really the fundamental message. Many times we find people looking at the wrong data when they're trying to determine, how am I doing relative to everybody else? And if all you hear on the evening news is what the market is doing, the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones Industrial Average, both of them up 18% year to date, you might conclude that you're supposed to be up 18% year to date. In fact, when you have a highly diversified portfolio that has a broad array of asset classes and market sectors, not just the 500 biggest stocks in America, but thousands of stocks all around the world, plus holdings in government bonds and corporate bonds, some of them short-term bonds that have very low rates of interest because they have very high degrees of safety. You have real estate, you have natural resources, you have exponential technologies, you have commodities, you have energy, oil and gas, gold and precious metals. No, you're not going to have an 18% rate of return, nor should you expect that you would. The public pension funds have earned typically 6.8 over the last 12 months. I'm just trying to give you a perspective so that you don't have unrealistic expectations or unrealistic dissatisfaction when it comes to the evaluation of your portfolio. So how do you evaluate it then? Well, the best way, in my opinion, the most effective way, the only way that really matters is to look at your goals, not your portfolio. Look at your goals. What are you trying to accomplish? How much money are you going to need, whether it's to pay for a kid's college or buy a home or generate income in retirement? How much money are you going to need? Are you on pace for accumulating that amount of money? If you are, you're in great shape. End of story. Without regard to what did the Dow do, what's happening at the S&P, what's the year to date, none of that matters. Look at your goals. If you haven't identified your goals, if you haven't set a target, then how do you know if you're on track for achieving that target? That's what the financial planning process is all about. Let us help you confirm that you're saving the proper amount of money in the proper type of investments to enable you to achieve the goals that you have for yourself and your family. That's what it's all about. 888-PLAN-RICK is how we can help you here at Edelman Financial Engines. We've been doing it for the last three decades for tens of thousands of folks all around the country. We're the largest independent registered investment advisory firm in the nation, and we're happy to help you as well. 888-752-6742. Visit us online if you like at rickedelman.com. Stay with us.
With the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Truth About Your Future, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Are you an overthinker? Hi, Rick Edelman here, host of The Rick Edelman Show right here every weekend. In three decades of serving folks like you here at Edelman Financial Engines, we've met a lot of folks who were trapped because they were overthinking their financial decisions. We get it. This can be scary stuff. You work really hard and you make a lot of sacrifices to save all your money. And well, just imagine if you make a mistake. Bad investment choices, the wrong mortgage, incorrect insurance coverage. It's enough to keep anyone awake at night. So here are two pieces of advice to help you solve the problem. First, realize that most decisions can be changed. And second, it's not just you, it's we. You don't have to go it alone. Let us help you. You'll get our experience and our expertise. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines. It's one decision you don't have to overthink. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com.
Patti LaBelle, live. Patti LaBelle, with special guest, the Pointer Sisters. September 8th, T-Layland Amphitheater.
Jet City Harley's giving 115% of Kelley Blue Book value when you trade for a new Harley now through Sunday. 115% of Kelley Blue Book trade value. It's worth more at Jet City Harley.
This is for mileage, preconditioning, and Sunday.
Effective July 1st, Washington's new state initiative 1639 requires semi-automatic rifle purchasers to submit proof of attending a firearm safety training class. West Coast Armory North invites you to take their single-session safety training class that meets all of the I-1639 mandated training requirements. The class is taught by one of West Coast Armory North's nationally certified instructors and costs just $25. For full details and to select a West Coast Armory North firearm safety training class, visit westcoastarmorynorth.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Edelman Show. 888-PLAN-RICK is our phone number here at Edelman Financial Engines. If you're facing conundrums of how to handle your money, if you're facing key decisions such as college decisions for yourself, your children, your grandchildren, estate planning, insurance, investments, taxes, mortgages, we're happy to help you. Just give us a call at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-752-6742, online at ricedelman.com. Very happy to tell you that Investopedia has just named me one of the nation's top 100 most influential financial advisors. They created this list of financial advisors who are making what they say significant contributions about financial literacy, investing strategies, life stage planning, and wealth management. I'm very honored to be included on Investopedia's list of the nation's top 100 financial advisors. I had a busy week last week. I was on CNBC a whole bunch on Closing Bell. I wrote an op-ed for CNBC.com on the mistakes investors make and the reasons you're making them. It was also quoted by Insurance News Net and PlanSponsor.com, and CityWire did an interview with me. So it was a pretty busy week, all of it focusing on, yeah, our financial literacy efforts to improve the state of personal finance around the country. Something weird happened in Germany. Now, look, you're a conservative, cautious investor, so you want to put some of your money into the safest investment that there is. What is it? It's a bond issued by the federal government. Here in the United States, the 10-year Treasury, this is a federal security called a Treasury note. It matures in 10 years, and it's now paying 1.7% in interest. It's the lowest interest rate in the U.S. in 3 years. Why is the interest rate so low? Because it's so safe. It's issued by the federal government. You're not going to get your money back for 10 years, and you're pretty confident you will get your money back because it's the federal government making the promise. So the interest rate's very low at 1.7. That's in the United States. Do you know that Germany issues government bonds as well? They issue a 10-year security just like we do. They're not paying 1.7%. They're paying negative one-half.
Well, you say we try that one again, huh?
Negative one-half. How can a government bond pay you a negative interest rate? What does that mean? It means you pay them. When interest rates go negative, it means investors are so worried about their local economy that Germans don't want to invest in the German stock market. They would rather buy a German bond issued by the government of Germany. And they're so willing to do this, they're willing to say to the German government, I'll pay you to take my money. I will give you, for every $100 I give you, I'll pay you 50 cents. You're earning no interest. You're paying a fee for the government to store your cash for you. Japan's got a negative interest rate as well. The United States doesn't. Investors are demanding interest from our government because our economy is much more stable and investors are much more confident about it. But yeah, you might ever hear something about negative interest rates. It's kind of wacky. Something else that you're likely to hear about, annuities. Has somebody pitched you the idea of buying an annuity product? Now, you know that we talk about annuities often on this program, not necessarily because of the products themselves, but because of the sales pitch that is used to convince you to buy the product. I have long lamented that there are three different kinds of financial advisors in our country. There are stockbrokers, regulated by FINRA. There are insurance agents, regulated by state insurance commissioners. And there are registered investment advisors, like me and my firm, regulated by the SEC. And only RIAs, registered investment advisors, like us here at Edelman Financial Engines, only registered investment advisors are required by law to act as a fiduciary, to act in your best interest, putting your needs first. And I've long lamented that this fiduciary standard doesn't apply to stockbrokers who hold a license from FINRA or to insurance agents who hold a state insurance license. Well, now I'm very happy to tell you that the state of New York has implemented a regulation requiring that everybody who sells annuities act in the best interests of consumers. This is very exciting. The law now requires that the insurance industry consider the best interests of the consumer above everything else when making an annuity recommendation. There are also new disclosure requirements, and the regulation also forbids people who are selling annuities from calling themselves financial advisors unless they really are licensed that way. So an insurance agent can't pretend that they're an advisor. They have to acknowledge, yeah, I'm an insurance salesman. I'm an insurance agent. I can't pretend I'm an advisor. Well, guess who hates this new rule? You guessed it. the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, and the Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers of New York, and the Professional Insurance Agents of New York, and the Testa Brothers, an insurance brokerage firm, and Gary Slavin, who's an insurance salesman. All of them hate the new rule. You know how I know? Because they all got together and they filed a lawsuit. And this lawsuit went all the way up to the New York Supreme Court. And last week, the court rejected their lawsuits. The court ruled that the new rule is neither arbitrary nor capricious in providing guidelines for trustworthy and competent practices and preventing self-dealing by insurance agents at the consumer's expense. I'm reading to you directly from the ruling. Against a backdrop of legitimate concerns for consumers, the burgeoning market of increasingly complex insurance and annuity products, and the rather remarkable rate at which consumers cancel their policies, the rule reflects a rational and reasonable movement toward consumer protection. Arguing against this standard is simply counterintuitive. That essentially was the quote from the ruling of the Supreme Court of New York, forcing everybody in New York to act in your best interests. My prediction, I'll give you two of them. First, you're going to see a dramatic drop in the number of annuity sales that occurs in the state of New York, as insurance agents realize they're not going to be able to succeed in selling products when they have to do it in a manner that conforms with the best interests standard. And number two, my prediction, you're going to see a lot of other states doing something similar. Nevada and New Jersey are already working on it. Massachusetts has a rule in place already. You're going to see this become very widespread as state regulators are fed up with the oppressive, misleading, and consumer-harming sales practices by way too many people in the financial services business. I'm Rick Edelman, and I'm very excited to see this rule by the state of New York. You're listening to The Truth About Money. 888-PLAN-RICK is our phone number, online at ricedelman.com. If we can help you make decisions in your best interests, let us know how we can help. 888-PLAN-RICK, rickedelman.com.
For free articles on personal finance, sign up for Rick's email update at rickedelman.com.
Are you an overthinker? Hi, Rick Edelman here, host of the Rick Edelman Show right here every weekend. In 3 decades of serving folks like you here at Edelman Financial Engines, we've met a lot of folks who were trapped because they were overthinking their financial decisions. We get it. This can be scary stuff. You work really hard and you make a lot of sacrifices to save all your money. And well, just imagine if you make a mistake. Bad investment choices, the wrong mortgage, incorrect insurance coverage, it's enough to keep anyone awake at night. So here are 2 pieces of advice to help you solve the problem. First, realize that most decisions can be changed. And second, it's not just you, it's we. You don't have to go it alone. Let us help you. You'll get our experience and our expertise. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines. It's one decision you don't have to overthink. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com. Are you an overthinker? Hi, Rick Edelman here, host of the Rick Edelman Show right here every weekend. In 3 decades of serving folks like you here at Edelman Financial Engines, we've met a lot of folks who were trapped because they were overthinking their financial decisions. We get it. This can be scary stuff. You work really hard, and you make a lot of sacrifices to save all your money. And, well, just imagine if you make a mistake. Bad investment choices, the wrong mortgage, incorrect insurance coverage, it's enough to keep anyone awake at night. So here are 2 pieces of advice to help you solve the problem. First, realize that most decisions can be changed. And second, it's not just you, it's we. You don't have to go it alone. Let us help you. You'll get our experience and our expertise. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines. It's one decision you don't have to overthink. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com. You're listening to The Rick Edelman Show. I'm Rick Edelman. We often talk on this program about the state of investor and consumer readiness. How are we doing? How are you doing with your personal finances? Well, we often talk about it anecdotally, but I want to talk about it rather empirically, scientifically, and through effective research. And who better to talk about this than Jerry Walsh, who's the president of FINRA's Investor Education Foundation. Jerry, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So tell us about this latest study about how we're doing with our personal finances.
Well, there's some good news and there's some bad news, kind of like with any great report, right?
Yeah, figures.
We did a survey of 27,000 plus U.S. adults to really benchmark how they're doing when it comes to financial capabilities.
And how are we doing?
So despite the economic growth and declining unemployment that we've had over the past 10 years, we see persistent widening gaps between those who are prospering and those who are struggling.
And that's really frustrating because we are in the best economic environment that we've had in decades. We've got the stock market at all-time highs. Interest rates and inflation rates are at lows. Unemployment rates are at lows. Housing prices are strong. And yet, about half of Americans are missing out.
Exactly.
All right, so some of the numbers you kind of get, I kind of understand, but one of them in particular, one of the statistics you came up with in your study just kind of floored me. So the numbers that I kind of understand, half of Americans say they can't cover expenses for 3 months if they were to lose their jobs. So people are living paycheck to paycheck in many cases. 8 out of 10 Americans say they have some kind of debt, and about a third of them say they have too much debt. Okay, I get that too. But here's the thing I don't get. The financial literacy rate since 2009, if we go back 10 years ago, the financial literacy rate has gone down 20%. We're getting dumber.
Are we getting dumber, Rick, though? I'm not sure that that's exactly right.
But that's what this says. The number of people who get the answers correct when quizzed on personal finance questions is lower than it was 10 years ago. Does that mean we're getting dumber?
There are a couple of things that might explain that number, because seeing that number decline is definitely a head-scratcher for us. There's no doubt. And, you know, 55-plus, the financial literacy levels are pretty much staying the same over the past 10 years. But folks who are 18 to 34 years old now have really never spent much time as adults in an environment where there have been high interest rates or high inflation.
In other words, people are able to answer questions correctly if those questions pertained to their personal experiences.
That's one of the things that we are hypothesizing, is that it really is experiential. There were also a couple of other hypotheses. A lot of municipalities cut back on funding for education.
The moral of the story, I think, is that we as parents and grandparents of these younger adults can't assume that our kids know as much as we know. We've gone through experiences they haven't. And so we need to make sure we're talking with our children and grandchildren about these subjects, because we can't assume that when they're getting ready to buy a house, they understand how the mortgage works.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, among people who feel like they're underwater on their homes, it tends to be the younger people who maybe didn't understand how mortgages work. So, yeah, all those concepts are really important. And it's really important that we focus on how critical financial education is, because, you know, we see that people, just to start with, Rick, fewer than a third of Americans have been exposed to financial education. And so we're already facing an uphill battle when it comes to financial literacy, because very few people are exposed to it either in high school or college or the workplace. But the people who have been, and the people who have been exposed to 10 or more hours, to a program that they consider high quality, they tend to have more positive financial behaviors. They're less likely to be overdrawing their checking account. They're less likely to be late on a mortgage payment or on any other kind of debt payment. They're less likely to engage in high-cost borrowing behaviors. So these concepts of financial education are super important.
The education works. And the neat part is it's not difficult. It's not complex. This stuff isn't rocket science. And it's easy to people to grasp fundamental financial concepts that can help them make much better financial decisions. So I agree with you, and we need to keep harping on this theme of financial education because it's really key. And I'll take it a step further. We talked a little bit a moment ago about how people rely on their own experiences to help them make good financial decisions. But if over the last 10 years we haven't experienced high interest rates or high inflation, you don't have that experience, and therefore you're not prepared for when that experience occurs. And that's why one of the messages I harp on a lot is don't rely on your personal experience. Look at the experiences of others. Learn from them so that you don't have to go through it yourself. And to that point, there are a couple of data items in your study that showed half of the Americans who have student loans today say they wish they had chosen a less expensive college so that it could have avoided some of the debt. And half of those who have student loans say they didn't understand how much they would owe when they got those loans.
That's heartbreaking because it suggests that there's college debt remorse, you know, buyer's remorse. I wouldn't have gone to this school if I'd known just how much it was going to cost me.
In other words,
and that's frightening.
It's very frightening. And as a result, you have a student who says, I'm headed to college. I'm not going to talk to anyone who went to college to get their advice with the benefit of their experience. I'm just going to go for it myself and end up making the same mistakes they did. So all we need to do is learn from the experiences of others. It's a lot faster, a lot cheaper, a lot easier, and you could largely help avoid the remorse that others are experiencing.
Exactly. And figuring out how to do the math so that you do understand how much you're going to owe. FINRA has some guidance on its website in the investor section, a whole series on saving for college and different ways that you can save for college and understanding the cost of college.
FINRA has done a lot of work over the years to improve financial education for consumers, and you offer a lot of content at your website. So tell everybody what the website is for FINRA so folks can go there to learn more.
It's FINRA.org, and you can click on the investor section, and you'll open up an array of tools and resources. So whether you're just getting started or you're a seasoned investor, there are tools and resources that you can use.
Jerry, it's always fun to have you on the program. Thanks for joining me again today.
Thanks again.
That's Jerry Walsh, the president of FINRA's Investor Education Foundation. She's also SVP of FINRA's Office of Investor Education. Do you ever wake up in the middle of the night or stop yourself mid-sentence wondering if you're going to run out of money in retirement? I want to help you avoid that dilemma, so I invite you to join us for one of our free live events. The event is called Three Keys to Retirement Planning. You'll learn about Social Security, estate planning, and investing for retirement. We're presenting the event in upcoming weeks in Columbia, Pittsburgh, Youngstown, Baltimore, Grand Rapids, New Orleans, and Baton Rouge. Events are free, but space can fill up quickly, so go to rickedelman.com, that's ricedelman.com, to register right now. You can also go to the seminar page at ricedelman.com to find out all the dates and locations all across the country where we're going to be presenting the seminar, Three Keys to Retirement Planning. We're heading off to Morris, Illinois, to talk with Bill. He's on the telephone. Welcome to the program, Bill. How are you?
Good. I enjoy listening to your show, Rick.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. What can I do for you?
My question is, what is a Trump Trust? An internet ad said that people are collecting thousands of dollars from the trust. The ad stated that as part of his huge tax cut, President Trump funneled $11 billion to the pockets of Trump Trust holders. What are they talking about?
I give up. What are they talking about? In other words, Bill, what you've been reading is a scam. Are they trying to, is part of the, what you've been reading suggesting that you send money to someone?
I didn't, it sounded too phony to me, and I didn't pursue it any further. That's why I was going to ask you if there was such a thing.
Yeah, no, there isn't. It sounds like a scam online, taking advantage of today's political environment to trick people into sending money to some crooks or con artists, which you'll never see again. Now, in the off chance that I'm wrong about this, the Trump Trust is a series of estate planning strategies that the Trump family has engaged in for the management of their personal and business assets. It's very common for wealthy individuals to engage in planning of this type, but that is something that they did for themselves, not something that is available to you. I mean, you can't access the Trump family trust for yourself, nor was there any legislation proposed by the president to create a trust device under his namesake for the purposes of the rest of Americans. And anybody who tries to claim that there is such a thing has to be a crook.
I was curious because it referenced the tax bill, so I thought
Bill, whatever website you found this content on, you must never visit again.
Okay.
So I'm glad you checked with me. I'm really, really glad, because too often people read something on the web, they take it as gospel, they act on whatever it happens to tell them to do, they've got get-rich-quick nonsense in their eyes. You said it correct. Sounded too good to be true. And in fact, I have no doubts that that is correct.
All right. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I appreciate your telephone call. I'm Rick Edelman. You're listening to The Truth About Money. Sometimes the truth hurts. Stay with us for more here on The Rick Edelman Show. 888-PLAN-RICK, online at ricedelman.com.
More with the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Truth About Money, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Are you an overthinker? Hi, Rick Edelman here, host of The Rick Edelman Show right here every weekend. In 3 decades of serving folks like you here at Edelman Financial Engines, we've met a lot of folks who were trapped because they were overthinking their financial decisions. We get it. This can be scary stuff. You work really hard and you make a lot of sacrifices to save all your money. And, well, just imagine if you make a mistake. Bad investment choices, the wrong mortgage, incorrect insurance coverage. It's enough to keep anyone awake at night. So here are 2 pieces of advice to help you solve the problem. First, realize that most decisions can be changed. And second, it's not just you, it's we. You don't have to go it alone. Let us help you. You'll get our experience and our expertise. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines. It's one decision you don't have to overthink. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com.
Right now at Arnold's Appliance, upgrade and save with up to $900 in rebates on eligible Wolf ranges and cooktops. Plus, with the addition of ventilation, get an additional $150 in rebates. Stop by Arnold's Appliance today and talk to their friendly, professional, and knowledgeable staff about all the details of this and other Wolf promotions. Arnold's Appliance, family-owned, serving homeowners and builders for over 45 years. In Bellevue on Northeast 20th Street or at arnoldsappliance.com.
You can now hear Cairo Radio on radio.com, live, anytime, anywhere. Go to your app store or radio.com/download and start listening today. Take Cairo Radio with you wherever you go. Download the radio.com app today.
I'm Rorden Shane, 4th generation jeweler. I tell my friends who are shopping for an engagement ring to see what's out there. Do research online, visit jewelry stores in person, ask questions, look around, then come to Shane Company last. You'll see with your own eyes that you get a prettier diamond for your money at Shane Company than anywhere else. For the center stone, we have many more diamonds to choose from in every shape and size. If you're considering a center stone with color, we have thousands of loose sapphires and rubies in every price range. Most jewelers don't even offer loose rubies and sapphires, and all of ours are natural, never lab created. You'll always find hundreds of new ring styles for every budget, from classic to halo to vintage to 3-stone rings. Our unrivaled warranty is free for a lifetime and even covers the center stone. Come in today and we'll show you how to build an affordable engagement ring that's beautiful from every angle.
Now you have a friend in the diamond business, Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
We're taking telephone calls here on the Rick Edelman Show off to Chicagoland. Ken is with us. How you doing, Ken?
I'm doing fine, Rick. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller, and I've read all your books. My wife and I, we're in our early 70s, and we're blessed to be in a position where our retirement is financially secure. And we established individual 529 college savings plans for each of our grandchildren as they were born. The oldest is 8. The youngest is now 4. They're a long way off from college, obviously. Now, I'm the owner of each of the accounts, and my wife is the successor owner. And we anticipate that these accounts will continue to grow as we put a lot of money in, enough so that our grandchildren's undergraduate, and maybe even much, if not all, the graduate school expenses will be covered. So here's my question about 529 plans. Should we at some point change the ownership of these grandparent-owned 529 accounts? And if so, to whom? To the parent? To the student? And when, if at all, should the ownership be changed? You know, all the advice I've read and heard seems to focus on the FAFSA form and maximizing financial aid. But the student won't need the financial aid, then it seems to me that FAFSA forms and all that ownership are moot points until such time when we grandparents pass on. So what do you say? Am I missing anything in this?
No, you're not. Your observation is correct. I'm assuming you're a wealthy person. I mean,
we're financially secure at this point. Let's put it that way.
So you've contributed how much money to each of these accounts?
Right now, we've contributed between $144,000 and $188,000 into each of the accounts, and we intend to stop once we reach $200,000 for each child, which will happen sometime in the next year or two.
Got it. So that's $1 million you and your wife are contributing to these five accounts for these five grandchildren.
Correct.
Like I said, you're a wealthy individual. Congratulations. Good for you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So,
I feel very blessed about that.
As well, you should. It's the American dream, and I'm very proud of you and your wife for your success. And your not only your success, but your support of the family. Just because people accumulate money doesn't mean that they share it with anybody. So good for you on both sides. Now, let me talk about the pragmatic elements of this. Your goal in an ideal world is to pay for their complete college educations, both undergrad and graduate, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So funding out up to $200,000 is plenty. You can always, chances are you'll still be alive when the kids do get to college. And if you discover at that time that it's not enough, say one of them decides to go to medical school, you can always write additional checks. So, not a concern on the upside, meaning on the overfunding element, if you are confident that the kids will not only go to college, but they'll also go to grad school of some type. The concern that I have is the flip side. My concern is that the child doesn't go to college or is a brilliant kid or a fabulous athlete and does win scholarships and doesn't need your money, or the cost of college becomes dramatically lower than it is today or has historically been, and it doesn't cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to college. And for all of those reasons, you may discover that you have overfunded the 529 plans. And for that reason, I might suggest to you that you stop funding the 529s because there are restrictions. If you don't use the money for college, the withdrawals are then subject to ordinary tax rates plus a 10% penalty. So I would want you to be careful about whether or not you're inadvertently, accidentally overfunding the accounts. Now, there's a couple of games we can play to reduce that risk. One of them is that just because you've put money into an account for a child doesn't mean you actually have to use the money for that child. You could leave the money there for that child's child.
Right.
And this way, between the two generations, chances are you'll use up all the money. So I'm not terribly worried that you have funded it as much as you have. I just want to put in the back of your mind the notion, are we sure we need to be giving them all this money for this purpose? Because you could always divert money instead to down payments on houses in their 20s and 30s. You know, it doesn't have to be all for college. Your goal is supporting the kids and helping them get a good start in life, and there are lots of ways you can do it. You can do it with cars, you can do it with houses, as well as you can do it with education. And let alone, who knows, what there might be health care costs, heaven forbid, that you've got to deal with in the future. So I would just put it all that as food for thought as you're going through your planning process. Second, have you discussed what you're doing with the parents? They know about this, yes?
Yes. The parents are fully informed of the amount that is in each of the children's plans. I provide them annually with what the statements are.
Super. And by extension, the in-laws also know.
From my children's spouses. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, in other words, is it your son or your daughter for all these kids?
Right, right. So their spouses know about this as well.
And therefore, their spouses' parents also know.
I'm not sure about that.
And the reason I bring it up is that I want to make sure that if you're busy doing all of this funding, which is likely to be sufficient for the need, that they also aren't doing this, or there really will be an overfunding problem.
Okay. All right. That's a good point.
So you just want to make sure that your kids are talking to their spouses and that their spouses are talking to their parents. In other words, hey, don't worry, we got college covered. You guys buy the houses, you know, that, you know, whatever. But I just want to make sure that there isn't twice as much money going into these accounts as you were thinking. Now, to the real question you asked, who should the owner of these accounts be? It's perfectly fine to leave it the way you have it. You're the owner of the account. The children are the beneficiaries. If you were to pass away, your wife becomes the owner of the account. She's the secondary owner of the account. Perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. If you die, she becomes the account's owner. She can then name a secondary or successor owner, and she could then name the children, the parents of the grandchildren.
Right.
And you're right, this ownership question is predominantly an issue of qualifying for financial aid. That's an irrelevant subject because your grandkids aren't going to need financial aid. You're the financial aider. That is a word. And by extension, I don't think you need to be terribly focusing on estate taxes either. I'll put the question to you. Or is the net worth of you and your wife significantly higher than $20 million?
No.
Then we don't have to worry much about estate tax implications either. Instead, what I really want to make sure you do, as the kids approach college age, that you work with the parents to facilitate a plan for the distribution of the money so that you are, in fact, using the money for college to minimize the risk that there's excess money left over because of the tax problem. In other words, if you use the money for college, all the profits come out tax-free. But if you don't use the money for college, taxes and penalties will apply.
I get that, yes.
So start indoctrinating the children now that this big bucket of money is there for them, and they had darn well better use it, and the only way for them to do that is to go to college.
Exactly.
In fact, they need to go to an expensive college. Wouldn't hurt if they changed their majors a few times, so the college took 8 years instead of four. You know, you get my drift.
I get it, sir. Thanks very much, Rick. You've answered the question and brought up a few other relevant issues with it as well, and I appreciate that very much. And good work.
It's my pleasure, Ken. Thank you so much for the phone call. I'm really glad you did.
Okay, thanks. Yep, bye-bye.
That was Ken from Chicagoland here on the Rick Edelman Show. You can do the same as he did. Call us with your financial questions, 888-PLAN-RICK. And if you need a new set of grandparents, I can maybe put you in touch with Ken. I'm Rick Edelman. Been a pleasure to be with you here on the program this weekend. Have a fabulous week. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. Visit us at rickedelman.com. And that's a wrap.
As a reward, you'll have no radio for the rest of the week. Go to your room.
See you next week.
Get the truth about money every weekend on The Rick Edelman Show.